Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's up, friends? Happy Friday. Welcome in to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Quick shout out today to start things off, both Brian Howe and John Lewick. Thank you both so much for becoming Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members. And today would actually be a perfect day to become a Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member. Later today will be our members-only Q&A. Don't have a time set quite yet, but that'll be early afternoon. Keep an eye out on the YouTube community page as well as over on Twitter. I'll post the time as soon as it is set. Also, the members-only episode, commercial-free, will be coming out in the next couple days as well. So if you have not yet checked out those YouTube memberships, now would be a perfect day to do so. Let's talk about some Packers, though. Before we get into our deep dive on Jacob Monk, a couple roster moves that took place on Thursday, the Packers released Rodney Matthews, an undrafted free agent out of Ohio University. He's a defensive lineman that signed right after the draft. He made it through rookie minicamp, but unfortunately that was as far as he went. He is now on waivers. Meanwhile, the Packers acquired defensive lineman Spencer Waggie, a defensive lineman out of North Dakota State. He was with the 49ers as an undrafted free agent in 2023. They signed him. He got released before the start of the regular season. He eventually ended up on their practice squad. He had a 9.58 relative athletic score, did all the testing, so super athletic profile, but he will take the place of Rodney Matthews. Again, both of them defensive linemen. They swap out Matthews for Spencer Waggie, and no deep dive today on Spencer Waggie. Maybe Ross Uglum, famed North Dakota State, supporter, and I know he covers the team as well, obviously. Maybe he'll do one eventually, but I'm sure we'll get to him at some point as well here, but no deep dive today. That's going to be left for Jacob Monk, but the Packers did acquire Waggie off of waivers, and we'll see what he can be as a defensive lineman moving forward for Green Bay. All right, no other preamble today, just our main event, and that is going to be the one, the only, Jacob Monk, 6'3", 308-pound offensive lineman out of Duke. He is a fifth-year senior. He will turn 23 in just under a month in June. He has 32.5-inch arms, 10-inch hands, large hands for a center, slightly shorter arms, although it is interesting. He was in the top 50th percentile for centers in this draft for arm length, so a lot of short-armed centers in this draft. So he actually measured fine against his peers, but usually that 33-inch arm is sort of the cutoff there, and again, he's at 32.5. Nothing that's going to be super catastrophic by any means, but just noteworthy nonetheless. Statistics are always a little bit less fun from an offensive line standpoint, but we'll get into some of the PFF statistics and the pressure rates and things like that. But first of all, he was a five-year starter. He played in 59 games and started 58 of them. He started 36 of those games at right guard, 12 of those games at right tackle, and 10 of those games at center, and also played some left guard as well, although it was sparingly this past season. Speaking of which, he played 18 total snaps in his career at left guard all this past season, 539 at center, 2,361 snaps at right guard, and 759 snaps at right tackle. So he played all over the place. The other thing that was crazy about this, there were games this season where he was in at right guard, center, and left guard all in the same game. And they would move him around to center, right guard, like in multiple games. It wasn't just like, hey, today you're going to play right tackle, today you're going to play center. Like, they would do it in games and switch them around wherever is advantageous, which was really impressive as well. Like, you're not even giving them like a week to like, hey, you know, we're going to move you to a different position this week. Let's give you some opportunity to learn. No, just mid-game. All right, now you're a right guard. Oh, now you're a left guard. Oh, now you're a center. It is pretty impressive from Jacob Monk that he's able to play in so many different snaps at so many different positions. And again, even switching mid-game. All right, let's go over some of the total pressures or the, you know, protection percentages or the pass rush or pass protection efficiency for Jacob Monk, whatever you want to call it. Again, these are per PFF. In 2023, he had 341 pass protection opportunities. He allowed one sack, three hits, 10 hurries for 14 total pressures and a 97.8% pass protection efficiency. In 2022, he had 316 opportunities, gave up 0 sacks, 3 hits, 16 hurries for 19 total pressures, and a 97.0% efficiency. Noteworthy here, only 1 sack allowed in the last 2 seasons combined. All right, 2021, 375 opportunities, 2 sacks allowed, no hits, 7 hurries, only 9 total pressures in 2021, which is super impressive for a 98.5% efficiency. In 2020, 440 opportunities, 2 sacks, 5 hits, 6 hurries, 13 total pressures for a 98.3% efficiency. And then 2019, by far his worst season from a pass blocking standpoint, 381 opportunities, gave up 7 sacks that season, 3 hits, 10 hurries, 20 total pressures, only a 96.5% efficiency. In total, 1,853 opportunities in pass protection, gave up 12 sacks, but again, 7 of those were in his first season as a freshman in 2019. 14 hits, 49 hurries, 75 total pressures for a 97.7% efficiency. For an example, Josh Myers this past season in the NFL at center had a 97.6% efficiency. So whatever you think of Myers, it's kind of a decent barometer here. 97.7% was Monk in his career in college. 97.6% efficiency was Josh Myers just this past season. He has a 98.1% efficiency as a pass protector in his career per PFF. Again, that's Josh Myers, 97.7% in his career for Jacob Monk. All right, from an athleticism standpoint, 9.73 relative athletic score. He did not do the agility testing, however, so we don't get the 3-cone or the short shuttle, which usually shows that change of direction ability. He tested 53rd percentile in height, 80th percentile in weight, 90th percentile in the bench press, which does show up on tape. He's very strong. 79th percentile in the vertical, 85th percentile in the broad jump, 86th percentile in the 40-yard dash, and 90th percentile in the 10-yard split, which was the second best among centers at the combine. And that 10-yard split is what you want to look at for offensive linemen. Usually they're not running 40 yards downfield. They're staying usually in about a 10-yard radius, and that 10-yard split is what matters a little bit more for offensive linemen than it does for other positions. All right, from a grading standpoint per PFF, had a 64.4 grade this past season on 704 snaps. Remember, 60 is right around average for them. 62.9 grade on 648 snaps in 2022. In 2021, he had a 67.3 grade on 753 snaps. 2020, he had a 68.1 grade on 817 snaps. And in 2019, he had a 55.2 grade on 759 snaps. So you kind of notice after that first season, that freshman year, which again was a little bit of a learning curve for him, that 55.2 grade, after that, it's basically stayed just kind of slightly above average. 68.1, 67.3, 62.9, 64.4. Never great, never bad, just sort of consistently slightly above average, again, per PFF. All right, let's jump into our positives and negatives and then kind of our key takeaways and what he can bring to the Packers. From a positive standpoint, he's very naturally low to the ground with a very low center of gravity that usually allows you to keep on balance a little bit more, but it just keeps you low. He's got really good low knee bend and just natural knee bend, I should say, and he plays with really good leverage and wins the leverage battle far more often than not. And when you're an offensive lineman that has a low center of gravity, is built sort of shorter but thicker, and can get low to the ground, have that natural knee bend and win with leverage, you're going to win a lot of those one-on-one matchups. Whether you're in college or the NFL, whatever you're doing, if you're an offensive lineman and you've got those things going for you, you're just going to win. Now, hand placement matters, footwork matters, technique matters, all that stuff matters, but it's definitely giving you a leg up as an offensive lineman when you're going to win leverage more often than not, when you can get low to the ground, have good natural knee bend, and have that low center of gravity. So those are all things that Jacob Monk has going for him. He's a, what I consider, a get the job done sort of player. Kind of going back to those PFF grades a little bit, where it's not anything super sexy. We're not talking about 95 grades here, anything else. You'll see some impressive pancakes from Jacob Monk. He will clear some big holes, which we'll get over or get to in just a moment. But overall, this is not your dominant offensive lineman. This is not somebody that you're going to see a bunch of highlight plays out of. I did post a few of them on Twitter, though, if you want to go watch. This is just sort of your Mark Tauscher-esque, hey, I'm just going to get the job done. Whatever is asked of me. And there's a great play that I posted and talking about getting low, where he gets out and pulls to his left, and he has to cut or at least block in some capacity the player in front of him. I think it was a linebacker on this play. And the linebacker starts to go low, and Monk gets down and gets lower and just clears the block completely and springs this pretty big hole for the running back, who gets through it. And it results in, like, I don't know, like a 75-yard touchdown run. It was a really, really impressive play. But that's just the sort of stuff that you see from Monk over and over, whether he's asked to seal block, whether he's asked to pull, whether he's asked to, you know, get out there in the screen game or just beat the guy in front of him, whatever it is, he's just getting the job done. And that's the sort of player that he is. It's not always the sexiest. It's not always the prettiest. It's not always the most technically sound, but more often than not, it's good. And that's kind of what you're just asking. Can you block the guy in front of you? We'll work on the technique over time. We'll work on all the different little nuances of the game, but can you get the job done in the meantime? And regardless of whether he's at right tackle, right guard, center, or left guard, the answer far more often than not was yes. I thought he was really impressive, and maybe his best trait overall was on pulls and screens, and specifically on pulls. It's so funny because you watch him and he is sort of that shorter, squattier player, and you're sort of expecting him to just kind of take some time to sort of waddle out there and get... No. He gets to all of the spots that he needs to get to on the field with very good efficiency. And that 10-yard split shows up, that 40-yard split, the vertical, the broad jump, that explosiveness all shows up. He gets to his spot quicker than the defender does. Even some more athletic, you know, edge players, linebackers, he's getting to his spot and then he is sealing and clearing out that play at a very, very high level. That seems to be, I don't know if he just enjoys doing that more or if he's just been trained on that very well, but that seems to be the sweet spot. If you can get him pulling and, you know, getting to that second level and then getting matched up, even if it's a defensive tackle, defensive end, linebacker, safety, it doesn't seem to matter. He enjoys doing it and he's really, really good at it. And like I said, you look at him and you're not expecting him to get out there with haste, but he does. He gets out there, hits all of his landmarks, and then just seals the block, and it's basically just over. And like I said, I think that's kind of the thing that he's ultimately best at. It happens in the screen game too. It happens to the second level running game. Like, whatever you need him to do to get to that spot on the field, he's going to get to it. That 10-yard split is indicative of him able to get out of his stance quick and then get to his spot. And we see that, again, not only in just the one-on-one matchups as he's getting out of his stance and blocking the person in front of him, but specifically on those pulling plays, specifically on those screen plays, he gets to where he needs to be. He gets the job done and gets to those blocks in a very, very impressive way. Football season, no football season, it doesn't really matter. It's always Prize Picks season. And there's never been a better time to get started with Prize Picks than right now, with all the NHL and NBA playoff action, as well as the WNBA season getting ready to start next week. You guys have heard me talk about Prize Picks quite a bit, so let me just key you in on some of my favorite aspects that you may not know about. First of all, they have newly introduced star players that, if selected and part of your starting lineup, could result in a 10% payout boost. This has made the usual amazing Prize Picks experience even that much more exciting. They also have injury insurance, so even if one of your players gets injured and they exit the game in the first half and don't return in the second, Prize Picks has your back and does not count that as a loss. And finally, I get this question all the time. Yes, Prize Picks is available in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, Georgia, and most importantly, Wisconsin. My picks this week, I'm going with the ultra-hot Anthony Edwards and Jalen Brunson in the NBA, and Connor McDavid for the Edmonton Oilers as they get set to take on the Vancouver Canucks. So here's what you need to do. Download the app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. He opens up some rather large holes in the running game. He's a powerful player. And when, again, you're sort of a little bit more compact, he was tested phenomenal in the bench press. He's got good power in his hands. He's got good striking ability. He will clear out some running lanes. And whether it's as a down blocker where he's getting, you know, he's coming to help and he's just going to clear that alley and he's going to clear somebody out, you will see that a decent amount on tape. Whether it is as a puller, and there's times where he pulls and he just throws people to the ground. There are definitely some pancakes on tape from Jacob Monk. Whether it's him getting to that spot and just sealing it, those are things that he does well. But there are multiple times where there are explosive running plays from Duke that are opened up because of Jacob Monk's running ability or blocking ability. And it's not, again, it's not just like a crease. It's not as it is a large gaping hole that that running back has a huge alley to run through. And you see it on tape on multiple occasions, especially over these past couple of years. So if you're looking, and we've sort of talked about from a Packers offensive line standpoint of like, hey, can we get some guys maybe on that offensive line that are a little bit more physically strong to maybe move some people? Because that's been a bit of an issue at times, is especially in the red zone, you know, getting in goal line situations of moving those big defenders. They don't have a ton of those guys. Jacob Monk has proven the ability. He can be a people mover in the run game and open up some pretty impressive running lanes for the running backs. And that's the other thing too I had here, and I kind of talked about this a little bit, but he does a really great job of sealing defenders. And this is another one of sort of his strengths as a player, just like a, I don't know if I want to call it a superpower, but he's really great at it. And whatever it is at his spot, he will get there, gets out of his stance quick, and then gets to his spot, and then he just seals. And it's funny to watch these defenders try to move him. Good luck. He's got, like I said, that low center of gravity. He anchors well. And it's just like, I've outworked you. I've got out of my stance quick. I've got to my spot. I've hit my landmark. And now I'm just getting low in my stance with that low natural knee bend, winning the leverage battle. And you can try to push as much as you would like. I'm just sitting here. It's almost just like he's on like cruise control of like could cross his arms and somebody's just given everything he's got to push. He's not moving. He's not budging. He becomes like this stone wall and it's just a seal. And we can talk like the Lombardi, you got a seal here and you seal. He's one of those seals and it opens up those big running lanes. So again, that's another one of his really impressive strengths that I really enjoyed watching on tape from him. When he does get his hands inside, he's got those big mitts. He gets his hands inside. You're not going anywhere. Now, there'll be some dancing from time to time where like you're going back and back and forth and the defensive tackle's trying to win the leverage battle. Then he's trying to win the leverage battle and it kind of goes back and forth sometimes. But when he gets his hands inside on you, good luck. It is like the, you like need the jaws of life to get him unclenched from your body. Like he is on there. He is clenched and you're not getting him off. And no matter how much you try to shake him or move him or push him away, he is locked on, gets those big claws inside, and he's not letting go. And that's when he can really control you. And that's, again, part of how he does such a great job at sealing defenders as well, getting those hands inside. Now, those hands are inconsistent. We're going to talk about that. But when he does get them inside, it's just kind of game over at that point. He has that versatility. We talked about all those positions that he played. Now, I truly believe that he is going to be a center in the NFL. I think that is going to be his best spot. I think he has the ability to be eventually a starting caliber center in this league. It's going to take time. It's going to take effort. He's going to have to work at it, but I do think he can become that. But he will also, outside of that, have the ability and the flexibility to play guard. And what you're really hoping from Jacob Monk is eventually that he does become that starting caliber player. But for this season, can he be that rotational player, that first guy up on the interior of the offensive line on game days? Remember, you're only activating usually 8 offensive linemen. You usually have a swing tackle, and this is obviously different sometimes for the Packers because they've got players that can play so many different positions. But in an unusual situation, you've got a swing tackle on the outside, and then you've got your interior guy who can play center, left guard, and right guard. Usually you want him to play all 3 of those positions. And then you've got your 8th offensive lineman, and you're just taking the best guy left after that. But you usually have your 5 starters, swing tackle, swing interior player, and then best remaining player after that. Those are usually your 8. And the hope for Monk is that he could be one of those players that wins that interior spot on the depth, your first guy up off the bench, who could, all right, our left guard's down, he can go at left guard. Our center's down, he can go in at center. Right guard's down, he can go at right guard. Now, in Green Bay's effort to get the best 5 guys on the offensive line, if, for example, Rashid Walker ends up being the top guy on the bench, even if a guard goes down, you might see Rashid Walker go in and Jordan Morgan kick inside, or Rashid Walker go in and Zach Tom kick inside, and you could end up in some of those other situations. But the point stands, you would love him to win that interior offensive line depth position where he's one of your first guys in if you need him to at left guard, center, or right guard. And he does have, in my opinion, that 3 position versatility, even if center is what ends up being his best position in the NFL. Experience is the next one. We talked about this a little bit, but 3,681 snaps in college with 58 starts and hasn't even turned 23 yet. He turns 23 again in a little less than a month. But That is super impressive. And having that much experience, it's just going to make you a more well-rounded player coming into the NFL. And I'm sure that Luke Butkus will have a little bit of a job on his hands, maybe untraining some of those things that he's done in 3,681 snaps, but you still love the experience that he brings to the table, especially when it comes at a variety of different positions. Also, like a lot of players that the Packers drafted, he is a two-time team captain. And by all accounts, the intangibles here are off the charts. Weight room warrior, works out all the time, lives and breathes football, two-time team captain, great football IQ. Like, everything about him sounds very Green Bay Packers-ish, which you love to hear as well. The next thing is, despite only starting 10 games at center, what happens a lot of times with these type of players is you'll see them play guard and tackle, and then they'll kick into center, and these shotgun snaps will be all over the place. I thought he was fantastic at snapping. I didn't see a single snap that went awry or had issues with. And I'll be totally honest, it's not like when you're in the midst of watching plays, you sometimes take that for granted. So it's not something that I'm always like laser focused on and keeping my eyes. But I didn't see a single bad snap in my entire time watching his tape. And like the shotgun snaps looked really great. I did watch him on a handful of different occasions. It was right where the quarterback was asking for it. And that, again, that might be something that is so easy to take for granted, but watch Tanner Bordellini from Wisconsin. He really struggled at center with some of those snaps. And it's not something that you can always just take for granted. Even Creed Humphrey has had issues with that at times. The player everyone, of course, wanted over Josh Myers. Humphrey has struggled with those snaps. Josh Myers, to his credit, has not. That's something that Myers is good at as well. But those snaps have been clean when he has played at center for Jacob Monk. Talked about the natural knee bend, second best 10-yard split for all centers at the combine. Again, 90th percentile overall, which leads to that good get off at the line of scrimmage. High football IQ, we talked about a little bit as well, but it also goes as far as to identifies blitzers very well, is very active on twists and stunts. There will be some times where players will split him on twists and stunts, and that's something he can work on, but he knows to get there, and it's not anything where like he's all of a sudden there's a twist and a stunt or something going on one side and he's looking the other side or going the wrong way. He does a really nice job of getting there. Again, some of the times maybe picking it up a little bit better and working in collaboration with his teammate can be a little bit cleaned up, but he's always aware of where they are and really smart. And he projects as somebody who should be able to make line calls in the NFL. Again, we're talking somebody that by all accounts is a huge football IQ, on tape showed the ability to pick up all these stunts, blitzes, games, everything. Two-time team captain, lives and breathes football, high character. You're looking at somebody who, if you do end up starting him at center at some point down the line, should have the capabilities of making all those checks and calls at the line of scrimmage as he develops in his career, likely again playing more at center as time goes on. I'll just end it by saying he's a really just solid overall player. Like I said, it's kind of in that get the job done mentality. And I enjoyed watching his tape. I didn't want to turn it off or didn't get bored. I just really, really fun, really solid, and like him as a player. Well, let's jump to the negatives, because as we talk about, there's always going to be weaknesses. Always, always, always. And there's always going to be things that he can clean up. So let's go over them. Let's see some of the things that he will need to clean up at the NFL level. The first thing is he struggles with mirroring defenders. That is something he needs to do a much better job of just getting in his pass pro stance and just staying between the defender and his quarterback and staying square to the defender, more importantly. A lot of times he would get either out too far or not far out enough, and it would allow the defender to attack one half of his body, and it would just leave him susceptible to getting beat rather quickly. And that's the things that you want to avoid. When he stays square and when he is getting in front of them and staying square with them, he's winning far more often than not. It's just when he, again, either oversets or undersets and just doesn't get square and doesn't mirror the defender well, that he ends up getting beat. And unfortunately, a lot of those times he ends up getting beat pretty quick. But he needs to do a better job of mirroring the defender, staying square, staying on balance. And what happens here is because he's only getting to that spot and allowing defenders, you know, that to attack half of his body, he's allowing defenders into his body far too often. And sometimes that's due to what we just said. Other times he's allowing his chest to get open and allowing those players to get their hands inside on his chest and then start pushing him backwards. And it's making him have to do a lot of work where he's basically holding on for dear life a little bit. And, you know, he's just kind of playing from behind is how I would say it. He actually does a pretty nice job of anchoring. And even when he does get beat or defenders do get their hands inside, where he can still stave it off a little bit. But you don't want to live that way. You don't want to live that way, opening up your chest to defenders. You don't want to live that way, allowing them to attack, you know, only half of your body, where the other half of your body's disengaged from the entire play. You don't want to get overextended. You don't want to overcommit. You don't want to underset. You want to be even, square, and on balance. And unfortunately, that happens from time to time, and he's just off balance too often and not mirroring them well and opening himself up to a variety of different pass rush moves by defenders and just some of those longer arm defenders who can get into him. And now all of a sudden, again, he's just playing from behind. So it's not to say he can't win some of those snaps still by just anchoring and recorrecting, but you don't want to live that way. You don't want to live with the defender getting the upper hand right away. We talked about where he's at his best when he can get out of his stance quick, get to his spot, and then attack. That's great, but if you're not, or if you're setting incorrectly, or you're allowing the defender to get into your body, or if they're able to attack half of your body with their full body, you're just setting yourself up for failure. So those are things that he needs to do a better job of. Very inconsistent hands. I talked about how when he gets his hands inside, he's going to win. He's strong enough. He's got big hands, and he's just going to control you far more often than not. But his hands get wide too often. And that's, again, where his chest gets open a little bit. His hands get a little too wide. And that's where, with a little bit shorter arms and wide hands and opening up your chest and not always having that perfect balance and not always staying square to the defender, you're just setting yourself up for failure or mistakes or opportunities for the defender to win. So the technique things, the ability to get square, get your hands inside. He's got heavy hands. He can pack a punch. So get them inside. And if you do, you're just going to win. Those are just things that need to get cleaned up. And these are great things that are correctable. Like, you don't want uncorrectable things on tape. You want correctable things on tape that when it comes to mistakes. And him making sure that his stance is and his set are a little bit more consistent, that he gets his hands inside more consistently, those are things that Luke Butkus will very easily be able to work on. And hopefully Jacob Monk will be able to correct. He will lunge into defenders and get himself into trouble. This is something we talked about with Tyler Guyton a little bit when we did his breakdowns of Guyton would be attacking and he would get, you know, overextend himself and lunge, and defenders would be able to just kind of pull him or use an arm over or just use that over aggressiveness against him. Same thing sort of here for Jacob Monk is he will lunge at defenders and defenders will use that against him. Kind of gets his head down, kind of gets bent over at the waist a little bit. And that's just a bad position to be in. So again, just staying more on balance, staying more square, making the defender come to you, and then you playing out the long game and not giving an easy win to the defender because you overextended yourself. Again, correctable thing here for Jacob Monk. The next thing, struggles when he does not win the leverage battle. And while he is shorter and stays low to the ground, natural knee bend, all those things are great. The vast majority of the time, he's winning that leverage battle. But it's almost like he wins it so often that when he doesn't win it, it like completely throws him off. And you will see sometimes against shorter defenders that have the ability to win that leverage battle against him, he struggles with it. And sometimes even too with length and those longer arm defenders, they'll get their hands up underneath them and he will struggle with it. So he wins it far more often than not. But when he doesn't, he's got to learn a plan of attack to sort of reset and get anchored down, even if he doesn't win, and just doing a better job too of just winning it so that that doesn't happen. But that does show up from time to time when he actually doesn't win the leverage battle, which again is few and far between. Next up, was never really dominant. Even against lesser opponents, even in his 5-year starting career, you know, going from different positions, right tackle, center, right guard, playing lesser opponents. There was never really a game where you just watched and you're like, my goodness, Jacob Monk is just on one. He is out there dominating this game. And that's kind of where we go back to. He's a good average player, really solid, enjoy watching him play. He kind of just gets the job done. But you were hoping at some time in college that there was going to be times where he just went out and just had his way because he has that athleticism. He's played for so long. He's got that experience under his belt. This past season, especially the 5th-year senior, you were kind of hoping to see a level up. And we didn't see that. We kind of saw the same Jacob Monk that we saw in other seasons, which isn't bad. He's been a good player. But you just wanted to see something a little bit more, and we just never really got that. Well, in the meantime, you did see games where he would really struggle. I thought Notre Dame this past season was a game that he really, really struggled with. And go back to 2022, against Jeff Hafley's defense in Boston College, he really struggled in that game as well. So there were some games where you're like, ugh, this isn't looking great. And there weren't necessarily those games where you're just like, my goodness, he is out there dominating. So there's a little bit of that where you wish he was just a little bit more dominant and wish he didn't have maybe those off games every now and again as well. More athletic linemen do give him some trouble, specifically over center. When he's at center and you get sort of that Za'Darius Smith rusher over the top where they use somebody a little bit more athletic and maybe a little bit speed, they get that runway. He wants to play in a phone booth. That's when he's at his best. When you're just one-on-one and it's just a hockey fight and you're just battling inside of a really small space, that's where Jacob Monk wants to be. Now, if you get a little bit more of a run-up and there's more space to navigate, that's where defenders get a little bit more of an opportunity to beat Monk, especially if they're a little bit more athletic, a little bit more twitched up. So that can give him some trouble from time to time. Longer bodies can get into his body with those shorter arms. And again, in those situations, he's forced to play from behind a little bit. We didn't see the consistent improvement. And this kind of goes back to those dominant performances are just kind of getting better. You had that tough first season, and then he took a jump in his sophomore season. But the next four seasons was basically the same Jacob Monk. You go and watch it. And there was even some tape, I thought, in those second and third seasons that rivaled or maybe even at times was a little bit better than his fourth and fifth seasons. And again, it's not at anything where you're looking at and being like, man, he's just playing poorly outside of maybe a little bit in that freshman season. But you wanted to see him go from average to good to great. And most of the time he fluctuated between slightly above average, average, and good. Like those were kind of where he fluctuated. And I just would have loved to have seen a bit more improvement, a bit more of a step in his final season, and a bit more of a dominant player, kind of as we touched base on just a minute ago. And last but not least, this is a fifth round pick, right? So you're lacking a little bit in high end upside. And that's going to be for most fifth round picks. I don't see anyone that's ever going to become a all-pro type of player here in Jacob Monk. And I hope he just proves me wrong, and that'd be amazing. I would love him to be an all-pro player, center, guard, wherever. But I see the ability to be a really solid, potentially starting center down the line. But I don't think, I think we're looking more at like a Scott Wells type player, where he becomes something like that on the upside. I don't think we're talking about a, Pro Bowl, all-pro caliber center, which is fine. You're taking somebody in the fifth round, you're developing them, and you're hoping that he can become a starter down the line for you. That's what, and in the meantime, being a really nice inner depth piece along the center and guard positions. So you're not taking him in the first round. You're taking him late in the fifth, and that's totally fine with where they took him. But I don't think he has that super high-end upside either. But again, I would love for him just to prove me wrong. So those are the negatives. What can he bring to the Packers in 2024? I think, first of all, you work to make the 53-man roster first, as much as I think he will. And I think he's going to be somebody who does make the 53. That's job number one. When you're a fifth-round pick, late fifth-round pick, you got to make the team first. There were fifth-round picks last year who got released before they got to the regular season. So you got to make the job. You got to make the team first, I should say. That's your job number one. Next is, can he get in the competition at right guard or center? I don't think it's going to be center, especially from what we heard from the assistant coaches this week. It sounds like your center is going to be Josh Myers. At least that's the plan as of right now, if they're telling us the truth. And we can go over that on a different date, feel how you want about that. But I would love if Jacob Monk or somebody else could get in that competition at center. But for right now, it seems like Josh Myers. But right guard, Sean Ryan, I think there's still an opportunity there. Royce Newman is at that guard position. You don't have a lot else unless, Jordan Morgan kicks inside or Zach Tom kicks inside. Right now, there's opportunity there. So can he get in that competition at right guard or maybe at center down the line? Can he earn that top backup spot on the interior offensive line where he is the top center guard on the interior, where if you need a sub, he's one of the ones that are going in? I would love to see him earn that. And then more importantly, can he show that maybe in 2025, if you want to move on from Josh Myers, does he have the potential to be a starting center in 2025? That's sort of the developmental plan here for Jacob Monk. But make the roster first. See if you can get in a competition for the right guard position, maybe the center position. Prove that you're worthy of one of the top game day spots where you can go in and sub in as needed. And then prove yourself as a potential option for 2025 if and when they do move on from Josh Myers. Final thoughts here. He was a 97th percentile athlete at center with a high football IQ, with a ton of experience, has versatility along the interior of the offensive line, was a two-time team captain, football junkie, weight room warrior, on a position that's really hard to find good players, and just offensive line in general, hard to find good players, and you got this guy in the fifth round? Yes, the tape, inconsistent at times. Did you want always a little bit more from Jacob Monk? Yes. But you're telling me in the fifth round, late fifth round, I get a 97th percentile athlete at center with a high football IQ, tons of experience, versatility, two-time team captain, weight room warrior that has potential to be a starter down the line in the fifth round? Sign me up. Sign me up every single time. So you got to work through some of those correctable issues that and those flaws that he needs to correct that I think he will correct over time. I think he's going to a great offensive line room. We'll be able to learn from guys like Josh Myers, Zach Tom, yeah, Elton Jenkins on the interior of that offensive line, not pressed into starting play right away. And I think he's going to be a really nice depth piece to begin with. But those sort of traits and that sort of resume late in the fifth round along the offensive line, sign me up. I'm totally cool with that. Good pick by Green Bay. I'm excited to see what he could become. Regardless of whether or not he got to those high-end abilities in college, I enjoyed watching his tape. Lots of really fun snaps that you get to see, and it shows right away when you turn on the tape. And I posted some of those on Twitter if you want to go look at them. So like the selection. Think he's going to be a depth piece that could develop into a starter down the line. All right, that's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Brad Dad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Bremen, David Prendergast, Dan Miller, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinoza, and Michael Shipper. I'll see you guys tomorrow. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.